Well, praise the Lord. I'm still trying to figure out who that person Stanley is. I want to bring you greetings from my church where I serve as an assistant pastor. And when your father-in-law is a senior pastor, you have no choice in what I do. But before I get into that, I just want to acknowledge my wife who sits right there, the prettiest gal in the congregation. Upon invitations, I've been traveling around the country, to churches and schools and colleges and government offices, telling people about God and His grace. I do a full-time job at the Royal Bank of Scotland, like my brother rightly said there, and on weekends I travel. Because our kids, Stephanie, who is 17, and Caitlin, who is 13, because they're in school, my wife cannot travel with me, so I go alone. So upon weekends, I'm gone. So on weekends, she is the husband, and she is the father, and she is everybody. Had I gotten married to somebody else, chances are they would have been divorcing me a long time ago. But thank God for faithful wives and decent Christian women. And all of you know what I'm talking about. All of you need to be applauding yourselves for that. I want to take you back briefly to date. Very, very briefly, because of time factor and all these good stuff. On that day when tragedy hits home. I want to take you back to that day when God, in His divine mercy, reached down and handpicked me and Brian Clark. And I may never understand why me and Brian, and why not all these good men, women, and children. Some things we just don't understand. But the book of Job 37:5 says He does wondrous things we cannot comprehend. And this is one of the things I do not understand. I've gone through many, many years of asking myself, Stan, why? Why? Why you, Stan? Why? And I stop one day and I ask myself, well, why not you? And like I said, I would never understand why things happen the way they do. But I want to take you back briefly to that day when the color of the skin did not matter, because we were covered by the same ash. I want to take you back to that day when the eagle cried. A day when we took for granted that we were impenetrable. A day when the bad guys hid and they crouch, like it's rightly said in the Bible, like a roaring lion seeking whom to devour. I want to take you back to that day when the twins were separated from the lady. I'm talking about the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center and the lady, the Statue of Liberty. And I want to give you a roller coaster tour from Elmont in Long Island, where we lived at the time, to Ground Zero. And I want to tell you, in whatever I have to say, it may sound like, as if I'm saying about me and I and Stanley, but it's not about me. It's about God and His grace. Nothing indifferent about this day. And 9 years have passed, and I still feel the same. We had a little house, 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom. And you know what it is to share a bathroom with your wife and 2 girls. Well, I'm taking a shower. And my wife is fixing her hair. And you know that one strand of hair that, Stan, today's a bad hair day and I still can't understand what that means? And this is what she's telling me. And while I'm showering and while I'm toweling, I'm praying in my heart the same prayer that I carried for many, many years. Lord, cover me and all my loved ones under Your precious blood. Here, take us to work and bring us back home in peace and safety. And that's all I'm saying. And looking at me, you would never tell that I was carrying a prayer in my heart. And I told her, I said, I'll wear a pair of khakis and white shirt and my lucky shoe. And she always told me it was an ugly pair of shoe. She said, for $110, I could have gotten a pair of Bostonian Florishon. And she's going on and on. I'm not a shopper. She is. So she calls it ugly. And I said, that's my lucky shoe. Today that shoe is in a shoebox with the word deliverance written all around it. And one day she asked me why. And I told her, I said, if ever I get cold for the Lord, I want you to bring me and open this box and show me where I was and what the Lord did for me. You see, because if wanted today, the Jews remember the Passover. And that day was my D-Day, my deliverance day, I call it. Dressed, drove from Elmont to Queens in New York, because of commuting expense, I would drive and go to the borough of Queens, take the A-train and commute to Lower Manhattan. Nothing indifferent. Stop in the same bagel store, pick up a raisin bagel and a cup of coffee, the same thing I ate for 13 years working at a trade center every single day. Call me a creature of habit. Briefcase in one hand, brown bag in one hand. We had occupied four floors at the trade center, 79 through the 82nd floor. And I worked in South Tower, the second tower, World Trade Center 2, on the 81st floor, all the way in the south side. We were told when we became tenants that if you drop a penny from the observation deck, it would have the same effect as shooting the 38 at point blank range. When you were working on the 81st floor, planes flew at the same altitude. And when you look down, trucks and buses look like little matchboxes. That's where I work. I helped to run the operation on the 81st floor for Fuji Bank Limited. I've been working in that group for 13 years up to that time. Brian worked on the 84th floor, took the same elevator with me, and we never saw each other. Never knew that this man, Brian Clark, ever existed. Less than 1 minute, I'm zoomed up to the 78th floor, the Sky Lobby. Got off from that elevator, took the local elevator, went to the 81st floor. Walk all the way down the hallway, turning right, and I'm in their office. A young lady is making copies of the copier, the Lee Seriano. Stan, how you doing? I'm special, thank you. Stan, I know you're special. See, my ex-pastor used to tell us, anybody ask you how you're doing, you tell them you're special. And they would turn around and give you that look. So I work with a bunch of Catholics and a bunch of Buddhists and Shintos and Bushidos and a handful of other, whatever that is. I took my religion to my job. See, I was in the elevator going up, the local elevator, when the first building was hit. And I didn't hear anything. I didn't have a clue what was happening. So still having this brown bag in my hand and my briefcase, the phone rang. And my mother is on the phone. Stan, how you doing? I'm fine, thank you. And my brothers took turn in asking me the same questions. And nobody told me at this point what was happening. It's not even 9 o'clock. There's a lot of love here. Hung up the phone, assuring everybody is fine. I'm fine. Put down the briefcase. And Delisa said, telling me, Stan, take a look. What is happening out there? Where our department was. If you look an angle to the right, you could have seen the North Tower, World Trade Center 1. So we went close to the ledge, and this building is surrounded by glass. And we're standing on the ledge, and we're watching. And what we saw were huge chunks of fireball coming down from the sky. God, what is happening? So we're watching. So I picked up the phone, and I'm dialing my boss, Peter Del Grasso, who worked in the first building. Pete's on, pick up. No response. Billy said, let's get out of here. So we ran out of the office, ran down the hallway, took the local elevator, back on the 78th floor, Sky Lobby. We were waiting there. Multiple elevator, crowded hallway. 18 other people from my office are there. Delisa and I, 20, we got in that elevator. Not a word is said. We went down. The doors open, there's a turnstile, and all I have to do is walk straight through. And I start walking. And the security guard looks at me and says, where are you going? I said, I'm going home. No, your building is safe, it's secured. Go back to your office. What do you do at that point when your bosses are in that elevator and they're not coming out? Do you go home? So I'm making that choice. If to go out or stay in that elevator. Or what to do. And Delise looks at me and said, Stan, I'm scared. Why don't you take the rest of the day off? Go home. And what are the guys? These are all the big shots in the elevator here. The head of human resources, the president, the CEO. All these big shots. Stan, how can you do this at a time like this? We have a job here to run. No. I'm running the operation. She is going home. End of discussion. First time I spoke back to my bosses like that. And that was probably the best decision I ever made. And this poor young lady, she's walking away. And she's walking away. She's turning back looking at me like, Oh man, I get this man into trouble. Go, go, go. And she's gone. Jack Andriacchio is holding on one side of the door. Manny Gomez is holding on the other side. Come on, standing man. You're not scared. You're a big man. Come on, let's go upstairs. And I still don't know at that point why I should be scared. And you can hear the intercom. Your building is safe. It's secure. Go back to your office. We did an anti-terrorism conference a little while ago in Portland, Oregon. And the Secret Service were there, and I asked them a question. I said, is it just remotely possible that if Al-Qaeda was that good to come and infiltrate this country right here and do what they did, is it possible that they paid those people to send everybody up? More collateral damage. Stan, you may be onto something here, but we don't know. Chances are we would never be able to find out. I'm still debating if to go back in this elevator, and I'm reliving 1993 when they bombed the Trade Center the first time. I remember Sophia Wang is sitting right in front here, and I'm sitting across the desk. She ordered pork chops and Chinese cabbage and rice, and we were having lunch, and all we heard was boom, and the bomb exploded in the basement level. And within seconds, the smoke rose. The place got dark. And I continue eating that pork chops. I said, if I'm going home today, I'm going with a full stomach. How can you eat at a time like this? Snap out. It felt good. They evacuated us to higher floors. A crazy thing to do. The smoke rises, you should go down. After that day, the nail shut the door that leads to the roof. I was a fire warden for my floor. We were never told. Chances are in 9/11, the people made their way up, realizing the doors nailed shut, and they didn't have time to come back down. And you know the rest of that story. So I'm debating in my heart what to do. Come on, Stan, we don't have all day. And half-heartedly, I walk back in that elevator. The lease is gone. It's 19 of us. The door closed. And I still remember the smiles on these people's faces. When you work with people for 13 years and you bonded with them, you become friends. And I still remember Alicia Levin smiling, never realizing that that's the last smile I would ever have. And Kawauchi, this fella, he had his sweater tucked in his khakis. Come on, man, it's a warm day. Stan is onto it again. And that little smile, never realizing you'd never hear that again. And we zoomed up. 78th floor. Took the local elevator. One man walks out in front of me. The man was out of a job for 6 months. And my boss's boss, Bob Militaglio, hired this man as a consultant. First week on the job. First week. They got his laptop. He's going to get it. But he first made his way to the men's room. And I never saw that man again. What do you tell this family when they call you and ask you, did you see my husband? What was the last word he said? How do you give them that comfort and that closure? And I walked all the way back, went in the office, and the phone is ringing again. A young lady from Chicago is calling me. Stan, get out. That's all she's telling me. Get out. Get out for what? Stan, we don't have time. Aren't you logged on to the computer? You're not watching the monitors? No, no, no. You tell me why. I'm a logical-minded person, and I will go. Stan, we don't have time. Please, Stan, get out. And I'm standing up with this phone in my hand, and I'm talking to this young lady, not looking anywhere in particular, and something caught my eyes. Something from the direction of the Statue of Liberty is coming towards me. Small first, and it's a split second, is getting bigger, bigger, bigger. Flight 175, United Airlines. You in the tail. The plane is bearing down, I level eye contact coming towards me. And all I have chance to do, I drop the phone and I scream, and I don't know why I said what I said. And even if you beat me over the head, I would still don't know why I said it. I said, Lord, you take over. And I dove under the desk. That's all I remember. And with a giant boom, the plane just imploded, just blew up, hitting the building. Upon impact, the floor above me dropped. Every walls were flattened. Everything looks like matchboxes, matchsticks. It looks like a demolition crew came and ripped the place apart. Everything is broken up. It looks like a war zone. A huge chunk of the plane broke out and was stuck. It looks like a part of the wing stuck in the doorway. It looks like somebody came and took a giant bag of cement and just threw it in the air. All the cables that are hanging in the ceiling dropped and they were short-circuiting. The sprinkler system came on. One way or the other, I'm going to die here. And what you didn't see on TV was the air pressure was so great it was sucking everything out, like the movie Airplane. If that floor don't collapse totally and crush me, well, then I'm going to get electrocuted. And if the two of them missed me, well, then I would get sucked out. And if that missed me, well, then I'm going to burn to death. I'm trying to get up, realizing the only desk that stood firm was the desk I'm hiding under. My Bible was on top of that desk. How do you explain this, my friends? How? And I start crying out to God, this invisible God that I've heard so much about. Lord, I don't want to die. Send somebody, anybody. And that split second, somebody at the other end of the floor had a flashlight and was shining it all over his head like this. And even though this man is responding, I'll wait for you, I couldn't hear because I got temporarily deaf. And I'm pushing the debris, 111. Eventually, I'm clear. And I can't stand up, so I'm crouching down because my head is touching the floor above me and it's hovering like this. That thing is going to collapse anytime. And I'm screaming, wait for me. I don't want to die. What is going to befall my wife and our two girls? And I'm crawling as fast as I could. I crawled the entire length of the loans department through the lounge, in the computer room, in the communication room, and one lousy sheetrock wall stood firm, right at one wall. Everything else is flattened, but one wall stood firm. One, a partition wall. And as I got closer to that wall, I can hear faint. And the person is saying, knock on the wall and I'll know where you are. So I'm banging on the wall. And he had a piece of wood or something, he's trying to break that piece of wall down to come towards me. I may never understand why some people would pray all their lives and they would never see results. I would never understand that. And here I am calling out on God. Calling out to God. And that split second, somebody is on the floor there waiting to rescue me. What are their chances? I can tell you though. Central Station was not busy. There was no call waiting, there was no operator, there was no long-distance carrier. I called, he heard, and my guardian angel and Brian Clark is waiting behind that wall to rescue me. I can hear faint, the man said, if you want to live, climb over that wall. I'll catch you on the other side. I can't do it. You got to think about your family and you have to climb over that wall. I jumped the first time, tried to grab on. Can't do it. Piece of sheetrock hanging loose, ceiling had a nail stuck onto it, just caved in, and trying to prevent it from hitting my face, I raised up my hands and it went straight through. I'm in worse shape than before. When I winced, the man said, what happened? I said, a nail went in my palm. He says, bite it out and try again. I can't do it. You have to do it. You have to think about your family. I would catch you on the other side. So, nail attached to a piece of wood, yes. Hit the wood, the nail is going to come off. I took the second option. And the hand just ballooned. Like magic, it just went like a little balloon. And I knew at this point that I would not have been able to make it. And I start pleading again to that invisible God that I've heard so much over the years. That if you ask it all your heart and mind and body and soul, He is going to intervene on your behalf and He is going to help you out. And I remember Joshua 7:7. Why did you leave us on the other side? Why did you have to bring us over to Jordan to be slaughtered? Why? Why? Lord, if you wanted me to die, why did you bring me all the way from the loans department to the lounge and the computer room and the communication room? Why didn't you leave me there? Why, God? And I'm pleading out to this God that I've heard so much about. And I got up and I'm looking at this wall that didn't possess a challenge anymore. And I'm caressing this wall, and I don't know why I did. And I'm asking this man behind the wall if he's a churchgoer. Why am I asking this man his religious conviction at a time like this? And I couldn't remember that. And he's reminding me on one of the interviews we did on CBS. And I couldn't remember. And I got up and all I remember, I made a fist as tightly as I could and I punched as hard as I could. Bam! And my fist passed right through that wall. And Brian grabbed my fist. He says, "I see your hand." I said, "Well, when you see my head, just yank my body through." I punched, the hole got bigger. And I stuck my head and this man gave me a headlock. And you guys know Brian. He grabbed me around the neck and the arm in one fluid motion like this. And he just pulled. He pulled with such force and I squirmed and I flew on the other side. Knocked him off his feet and we rolled down a couple of stairs and I landed on top of Brian. And I don't know how to save a man. Thank a man who just saved my life. I grabbed the man, gave him a kiss on the cheek. He said, "Whoa, what are you doing?" And he got up. You know, I called him GQ. Sharp dresser and all. He got up, very composed, and he said, "Brian Clark." That's what he said. And I said, "Stanley Premnant." But this man did something that I'll go to the grave with remembering. He held my hands. He just held his hand. And he took his left hand and he was rubbing this wound. And this man stared me in the eyes and he said something. And this is what he said. He said, "All my life I lived as an only child. I was born and raised in Canada. I always wanted a brother. But I find that man today." And this man put his hand around my shoulder. And he took his left palm that had a gash inside. And he rubbed the two hands together and said, "From this day, you're my blood brother." He says, "Come on, buddy, let's go home." And we started that long journey home. You had to walk 10 flights of stairs. Turn in a little landing. Not a 10 flight of stairs, and then you cover one floor. We have 80 floors to go. And Brian were more concerned about me getting serious injured than himself. He had his hand around my shoulder. And he was holding on the rail in one hand, and I was holding on. I was hobbling down. And you talk about a good man. And I always tell him, if I want to be rescued again, I want Brian Clark, nobody else. And that lucky shoe was giving me all the traction that I needed because that water was just cascading down the stairwells and we were hobbling. And we stopped, I think 40-something floor, I think it was the 46th floor. And as we stopped there, there's a man lying down, closely shaved head. Saw this man before, and I don't like to describe people in color, but this was an Italian fellow lying down on the ground. I've seen this man before, don't know his name, don't know anything about him. And there was an African-American security guard who stood by this man. And this man who was lying on the ground, he had massive head injury, broken back, and this man was crying out. And every night before I go to sleep, I'm still remembering this man. I can hear these words in my head, this period between sleep and awake. And this man is saying, "Please tell my wife and our baby that I love them. Please tell my wife and our baby that I love them." And you can see where his head was caved in and you can see bubbles and blood oozing out. And Brian said, "Let's take this man downstairs." Security guard said, "No, don't touch him. Touching this man would cause him more serious injury. Send help." And this man guarded that fellow with his life and they both perished that day. The color of the skin did not matter. We were covered by the same ash. Brian is frantically dialing 911. There's a man down and they're rerouting all the calls. And Brian called his wife, Diane, to tell her that he's fine. He's coming home. And I didn't have that kind of luck that day. My wife was going to work and she came out of the subway. The first building is hit. And from their office, which is right over the Brooklyn Bridge, they're watching the spectacle. The second building is hit, and in her heart, I was a goner. One of the girls took her to the subway, calmed her nerves, and she drove home, got the kids, and she's waiting. I spoke to a lady named Louise, her supervisor at the time. Said, if you get in contact with Jenny, tell her that I'm coming home to you girls. And Brian is still calling 911. There's a man down. And we give up because they were routing all the calls. And Brian and I went down. One man passed us on the way. I don't remember the fellow's name, but he worked with Brian. And he was going up to rescue somebody else. That man never made it out either. And Brian and I reached the mezzanine level. I didn't know which way to go. To begin with, coming down the stairs, Brian knew we had to take stairwell A. Had we chosen B or C, which was nearby, chances are we would not have been here today. They were just chopped off. But he knew we had to take stairwell A. We got downstairs. The only people we saw were the firefighters and cops and EMS workers. See, when the first building, second building was hit, the people who were outside watching, nobody else came back in. And nobody thought that people above the 81st floor were trapped. Brian later told me that he was coming downstairs with a group of eight other people. And when they got down at the 81st floor, they heard the scream. And the rest of the folks made the wrong choice to go back up. And he stopped to investigate, and that's how we lived. Brian later told me on CBS and on CNN, he said he was in a bubble. He was oblivious to smoke. There was something in that scream that held him down. Even though he wanted to move, he couldn't have. The power of God. Every time I say, Brian, thank you for saving my life. No, Stan, thank you. Had you not screamed, I would have gone back up because we saw so much debris on that floor and I would have died. And these good men in uniform, men and women, they're belching orders. Run, 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 go to liberty. Liberty at the time just meant a street. Today is total freedom. And we're running and they're saying, do not look up, do not look around, just go, go, go. And they're cheering us, the people who were roped around four blocks. And as we're running, I'm telling Brian, this is God's doing. I'm going to Trinity Church. He says, I'm coming right with you. I had a business card in my pocket, slipping in his hand, and I don't walk around with business cards. And we're running. We're running, and the people are cheering. It looks like a scene from Forrest Gump, and we're running, running, running. And I bumped into this big guy. He was standing up like this, a Catholic priest. And he's watching this whole episode right there. And I nearly knocked the man over. Brian later told me that I was babbling in a language he don't understand. Brian said the priest told him that this man needs a hospital badly, but he needs the church. And right then, they prayed for me. And I don't remember all this. And the next thing I remember, we are holding on to the fence of the Trinity Church, and I'm breathing hard. And I was in the best shape of my life. And I'm telling Brian, it's going down now. Stan, what is going down? What you see burning there is all draperies and cosmetic and paper. By profession, I'm an engineer. Steel don't bend. And stop short of what he's saying because the building starts to sway so much on one side, we thought it was going to tilt over. And then they start swaying the other side. Same thing we thought. And you could hear this strange sound it's making and the ground starts vibrating and the next thing we know, the building starts to implode. Every form of expression you could have heard. And the ladies were taking out the high heels and they were running helter-skelter. And the not-so-able are getting trampled. Some people are praising God, some are cursing, some are swearing, and they're running. And Brian and I got separated from each other. And I can hear Stanley and I'm calling for Brian. And this man who had been my support for the past hour or so, I can't see this man. And I got angry. I got angry. I should have been thankful because I just got delivered. I got angry because I thought that these bad guys are bombing the financial area and I got to go save my wife. And I'm looking around for something or somebody and I can't find it. And I saw a man driving a 4x4 pickup truck. I yanked the door, said, drive, one word from you, you're dead. Well, when you look like me, bloodied and black and blue, with an undershirt, look, it came from a shredder. My sister-in-law said, I look like Muhammad Atta. You would be scared too. The man reached on top of his dashboard, picked up a box of cigarettes, a white box, and says, here, smoke. I said, no, man, I had enough smoke for one day. So he is driving like a crazy man now on top of the sidewalks and all. He reached the ramp of the Brooklyn Bridge. I yank open the door, thank you, hobble out, and I'm gone again. And I bumped into this big man now. And I'm expecting him to take a swing at me. Instead, the man turned around and he took compassion. The man says, my name is Albert DeLeon. I'm a senior counsel for French Bank. Anything you want. I said, all I want you to do is to show me the building where my wife worked. And I was cautioned not to see where she worked at the time. And I told him the building number. The man said, I live right behind that building. What are the chances for you to bump into that one man, 40,000 people on top of the bridge, and he lives right behind that building? It gets weirder. That same day, my father-in-law and a group of guys chose to put up in our sanctuary a sign that reads, enter into his presence with thanksgiving. And while they're putting up that sign, one of the fellas had a radio. They interrupted the program to say there's a terrorist attack in the World Trade Center. He left the people there, and a group of ladies would go every Tuesday morning to pray. And they're praying. He went home, told my mother-in-law what's happening. They're watching TV. They're praying. And as they're praying, God is sending people my way to help me all day. I told the man, I said, I'm not going because they hotwired this bridge and everybody's going to die. Now he looked at me as if I'm crazy. It's a logical thing, right? So I sat down there and people are jumping over, screaming, they're running. And he said, listen, tell me what are you hearing above there? He thought I was crazy. And you can hear the F-16 hovering over lower Manhattan. Can you hear those sounds? Yes. What is that? That is Uncle Sam taking care of business. He said, come on, let's go. I was in Vietnam and we start to run. And we got to the lobby of the building where my wife works. And the man wanted the security guard to pull out his guard stick and said, oh no, you're not coming here. And I took a karate stand. See, I was dabbling around with Kempo, White Tiger Kung Fu. And I took a karate stance. Come on. And this man is making so much noise. Oh, we want to see Jennifer in the legal department. And the receptionist heard. And she called that department. And the corner of my eyes, I saw this man running, coming towards us. And as he came, he pushed the security people. I said, what are you doing, Stan? He's a good man. And this man had no undershirt. He had a white shirt on. And this man took out his shirt. You can have my shirt. When a man looks at you and is willing to part with that one shirt that he has, it will bring tears to your eyes. Just give this man anything he wants and make him well. Stan, I can't stay here. We have an emergency meeting. I've got to go. The nurse said, Stan, you need the hospital badly. Now, if I can only hear my wife's voice, I would be fine. That's all I want to hear. Know that she is fine, and I would be okay. If this Bible was to be rewritten in modern days, this man, Greg Langan, I had all the luck with the Irish that day. Brian Clark, not Greg. He would have been the Good Samaritan. But I can't remember her home number. I'm so crazy in my head. My right hand is still swollen. Give me a phone. And I'm punching the number. And the number pops in my head. And here's Jennifer on the other end. Are you okay? I'm fine. The Lord took good care of me. I'm coming home to you girls. And she can't believe it's me. See, when the second plane hit, she thought I was a goner. And here I am, telling her I'm okay. She's in shock, she's in disbelief, and she's in denial. I'm coming home to you girls. The nurse gave me one of her jackets. She had a sandwich and an apple, a bottle of water, Stan. I want you to have this. Take it, you need it. You need the hospital, Stan. We don't have the facility here to take care of you. And she walked me down the train station and said, I can't send you home with a car. They shut down the parkway. And we went downstairs in the subway system. We waited, the train came, and we were rerouted all over around Manhattan. Then I made it back to where I was parked up. When I got there, I realized it's an effort for me to put on the seatbelt, and I'm scared of getting a ticket. And like a robot, I drove all the way home. When I got to Elmont, Jenny is standing up in front of the house on the porch, and Stephanie is standing up on the right-hand side. Stephanie was 8 and a half. Caitlin was 4, standing on the left hand. We had lost the front door keys, so we used the back door. So to see them standing up in front of the house in the front door, wow. And all the neighbors were out. And as I got there, I pull up in the driveway. Everybody's running, hugging, kissing. Thank God you're safe, Stan. Thank God, thank God. And I walk upstairs, and I reach for my little daughter, Caitlin. And when that child saw me, she would not recognize me. She's hiding behind my wife. Don't touch me. You're not my daddy. Please don't touch me. And men, when your own child do not recognize you, you would reach that breaking point. And I reached for Stephanie, and she had a butter knife in one hand. She probably just had a sandwich or something. And this child, I reached for her and hugged her. And this child looked at me and says, Dad, if you didn't come home, I was going to kill myself. When I heard those words, after all that I've gone through, didn't mean anything to me. I just hugged that family, my wife and the girls. I said, Lord, thank you. I don't remember much of what happened afterwards. I don't know if my wife realized all that. But I remember I'm telling her, don't take me to the hospital. Take me to Dr. Grant. He would know exactly what to do. And I remember, as I'm telling this man in and out what happened to me, he didn't believe. He called his brother, who was my tax accountant. And I can hear very well the brother is saying, if Stan tells you that, it's the truth. His brother was a lay preacher. And I remembered, I'm back home, they give me tetanus shots and x-rays and everything else. I have no broken bones. All I need is a place in a warm, loving environment. And I will snap out, I'll be able to be back again on my feet eventually. And I don't know how eventually long that would be. But I remember I'm watching TV, and the newscaster is saying 911 is an emergency number. September is spelled with 9 letters. And she's going on and on and on. And I remembered vividly. I asked my wife to give me my Bible. Jane, can you pass me my Bible? I remember the pastor is saying in my head, all this thing is happening. All the answers are in the Bible. And I had this King James' version of the Bible with a zipper around. And I'm turning the pages. I stop. Psalm 91 verse 1. That's 9-1-1. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Wow. Good stuff. And I'm reading down. And he shall give his angels charges over thee and keep thee on all thy ways. Wow. Powerful. And I'm reading down verse 15. And he shall call upon me and I will answer, will be with him in trouble. And with long life shall I satisfy him and show him my salvation. You can't top that. And I snapped out of all that rut that was in. I went counseling. The stock exchange gave me 10 free sessions of counseling. I went the first day counseling. The counselor said, tell me why you're here. By the time I was done, she was in tears. So I ended up telling her about God and His grace. The first week of October of that same day, the same year, I went back to work. The doctors were insistent that I go back to work. The faster you go back to work, the faster you would be out of the shell and you would move on with your life. I didn't want to be a public charge of the government. I wanted our children to see me as a motivational factor. I want them to see Daddy gets up and go to work every day. I went back to work. It was a long uphill struggle that I carried by myself. My wife was my soldier, my partner, my help, my everything. I remember I used to put my hands around her shoulder. And she used to hobble with me. And she used to take me in the bathtub. And I had a leg wound. And she would elevate that leg. And she would come and help me to towel. She would leave me a sandwich, a bottle of water, a telephone, a notepad, everything. And she took good care of me. But had it not been for the divine grace of God and that one good man who stopped to investigate, I would not have made it. But my friends, I want to tell you something. You might be going through a similar situation. It may not be as catastrophic as the World Trade Center. It may be a situation where you're sick and you don't see no way out. It may be a situation where you are going through some problem with your children or your spouse. That financial crisis, whatever it is. But rest assured, He is able. He is able to do all things. My little daughter Caitlin would sing, "My God is so big, so strong, and so mighty. There's nothing my God cannot do." I'm telling you what a God that I'm familiar with. I'm telling you what a God who, if we call upon Him with all our heart and mind and body and soul, He's going to intervene in our behalf. I may never understand why me. I may never understand why He reached down in His mercies for a sinner like me. But I can tell you, there's something about God and His grace. James said, "Effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much." Whatever all that means, right? What I can tell you, my friends, He would make that way for you. He would make that stream to run through that desert. And He would cut that path. He would make that path to the wilderness. My God is able. Today I want to give God all the praise and all the thanks because He is good. And His mercies endure forever. He's the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the Prince of Peace. He is Jehovah Jireh. I have moved on. He has transformed me by His Holy Spirit. Brought me out from this miry clay. And my feet is on that rock. And I have that song in my soul. Because of my God. You can have that same song in your soul today. You can have it. All you've got to do is make Him the Lord of your life. Today I've had credentials. I'm a certified pastor with the Assemblies of God. I've been interviewed by every major television, radio, newspaper. From India right down, all the countries in between, to Brazil. My wife says it's a good thing. If ever you get crazy and act indifferently outside, somebody would recognize you. We were walking one day at a Rusalfi shopping mall. And as we got there, this man came, grabbed my hand. "Brother Stan, how you doing?" We did an infomercial that they call "God Will Make a Way." "How you doing?" I said, "I'm well done." Looks at me. See, the three Hebrew boys were in the fiery furnace. They came out unscratched, unharmed. I was in the towering inferno. And all the infirmities, all the impurities, all the bad stuff are burnt out. I'm well done. Praise the Lord. If you don't see me back here, rest assured that I'm in some other church, someplace else, telling somebody about God and His grace. Remember, my wife Jennifer, our girls Stephanie and Caitlin, and myself in prayer, but when you go before the Lord, may God richly bless every one of you and walk with the King. Praise the Lord.